ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Shri Sukha Uvacha Sa Upaspriya Salilam Samshito Drita Karmuka Nayanam Jumata Parsvam Niraske Pyahasaratim Uvacha Sa Upaspriya Salilam Samshito Drita Karmuka Nayamam Jumata Parsvam Nirasye Chahasaratim having left the battlefield when his chariot driver carried him away unconscious.
I'll just continue reading quite a few texts here. There's a couple of small purports, but we'll get the we'll get the flow of the story. Text 2, and for Jumna's absence, Jumna had been devastating his army, but now Pradyumna counterattacked Juman and smiling pierced him with 8 Narasha arrows. Purport Srila Vishnu Chakravarti comments that Pradyumna challenged Juman, saying, "Now see if you can strike me." After saying this and allowing Juman to shoot his weapon, Pradyumna released his own deadly arrows. Text 3, with 4 of these arrows he struck Juman's 4 horses, with 1 arrow his driver, and with 2 more arrows his bow and chariot flag, and with the last arrow Juman's head. Gada, Satyaki, Shamba and others began killing Shalva's army, and thus all the soldiers inside the airship began falling into the ocean, their necks severed. As the Yadus and Shalva's followers thus went on attacking one another, the tumultuous, fearsome battle continued for 27 days and nights. Invited by Yudhisthira, the son of Dharma, Lord Krishna had gone to Indraprastha. Now that the Rajasuya sacrifice had been completed and Shishupal killed, the Lord began to see inauspicious omens. So he took leave of the Kuru elders and the great sages, and also of Krita and her sons, and returned to Dvaraka. The Lord said to himself, "Because I have come here with my respected elder brother, kings partial to Shishupal may well be attacking my capital city." Shukadeva Goswami continued, "After he arrived at Dvaraka and saw how his people were threatened with destruction, and also saw Shalva and his Shobha airship, Lord Keshava arranged for the city's defense and then addressed Dvaraka as follows." Lord Krishna placed Sri Balaram in a strategic position to guard the city, and he also appointed a special guard for Sri Rukmini and other queens inside the palaces. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, by secret routes, special soldiers conveyed the queens to safety inside Dvaraka. Continuing text 10. Lord Krishna said, "O driver, quickly take my chariot near Shalva. This Lord of Shobha is a powerful magician. Don't let him bewilder you." Thus ordered, Dvaraka took command of the Lord's chariot and drove forth. As the chariot entered the battlefield, everyone there, both friend and foe, caught sight of the emblem of Garuda. When Shalva, the master of a decimated army, saw Lord Krishna approaching, he hurled his spear at the Lord's charioteer. The spear roared frighteningly as it flew across the battlefield. Shalva's hurtling spear lit up the whole sky like a mighty meteor, but Lord Shauri tore the great weapon into hundreds of pieces with his arrows. Lord Krishna then pierced Shalva with 16 arrows and struck the Shobha airship with a deluge of arrows as it darted about the sky. Firing his arrows, the Lord appeared like the sun flooding the heavens with its rays. Shalva then managed to strike Lord Krishna's left arm, which held his bow, Sharanga, and amazingly, Sharanga fell from his hand. Those who witnessed this all cried out in dismay. Then the master of Shobha roared loudly and addressed Lord Janardhan. Shalva said, "You fool, because in your presence you kidnapped the bride of our friend Shishupal, your own cousin, and because you later murdered him in the sacred assembly while he was inattentive, today with my sharp arrows I will send you to the land of no return. Although you think yourself invincible, I will kill you now if you dare stand before me." The Supreme Lord said, "O dullard, you boast in vain, since you fail to see death standing near you. Real heroes do not talk much, but rather show their prowess in action." Having said this, the furious Lord swung his club with frightening power and speed, and hit Shalva on the collarbone, making him tremble and vomit blood. But as soon as Lord Achyuta withdrew his club, Shalva disappeared from sight, and a moment later a man approached the Lord. Bowing his head down to him, he announced, "Devaki has sent me," and sobbing spoke the following words. The man said, "O Krishna, Krishna, mighty armed one, who are so affectionate to your parents, Shalva has seized your father and taken him away, as a butcher leads an animal to slaughter." When he heard this disturbing news, Lord Krishna, who was playing the role of a mortal man, showed sorrow and compassion, and out of love for his parents, he spoke the following words like an ordinary conditioned soul. Lord Krishna said, "Balaram is ever vigilant, and no demigod or demon can defeat him. So how could this insignificant Shalva defeat him and abduct my father? Indeed, fate is all powerful." After Govinda spoke these words, the master of Shobha again appeared, apparently leading Vasudeva before the Lord. Shalva then spoke as follows. Shalva said, "Here is your dear father, who begot you, and for whose sake you are living in this world. I shall now kill him before your very eyes. Save him if you can, weakling." After he had mocked the Lord in this way, the magician Shalva appeared to cut off Vasudeva's head with his sword. Taking the head with him, he entered the Shobha vehicle, which was hovering in the sky. By nature, Lord Krishna is full of knowledge, and he possesses unlimited powers of perception. Yet for a moment, out of great affection for his loved ones, he remained absorbed in the mood of an ordinary human being. He soon recalled, however, that this was all a demoniac illusion engineered by Maya Dhanava and employed by Shalva. Now alert to the actual situation, Lord Achyuta saw before him on the battlefield neither the messenger nor his father's body. It was as if he had awakened from a dream, seeing his enemy flying above him in his Shobha plane. The Lord then prepared to kill him. We're up to text 30. Such is the account given by some sages, O wise king, but those who speak in this illogical way are contradicting themselves, having forgotten their own previous statements. Wherefore, if someone thinks that Lord Krishna was actually bewildered by Shalva's magic, and that the Lord was subjected to ordinary mundane lamentation, such an opinion is illogical and contradictory, since it's well known that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, transcendental and absolute. This will be explained in the following verses. 31. How can lamentation, bewilderment, material affection or fear, all born out of ignorance, be ascribed to the infinite Supreme Lord, whose perception, knowledge and power are all similarly infinite? Purport. Srila Prabhupada writes, "Lamentation, aggrievement and bewilderment are characteristics of conditioned souls. But how can such things affect the person of the Supreme, who is full of knowledge, power and all opulence? Actually, it's not at all possible that Lord Krishna was misled by the mystic jugglery of Shalva. He was displaying his pastime of playing the role of a human being." All the great Bhagavatam commentators conclude that grief, illusion, attachment and fear, which arise out of ignorance of the soul, can never be present in the transcendental dramatic pastimes enacted by the Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami gives many examples from Krishna's pastimes to illustrate this point. For instance, when the cowherd boys entered the mouth of Bagasura, Lord Krishna was apparently astonished. Similarly, when Brahma took away Lord Krishna's cowherd boyfriends and cows, the Lord at first began to look for them as if he did not know where they were. Thus the Lord plays the part of an ordinary human being so as to relish transcendental pastimes with his devotees. One should never think the personality of Godhead is an ordinary person, as Sukadeva Goswami explains in this and the following verse. So, Krishna does sometimes seem to be confused or bewildered, but the commentators, the Bhagavatam commentators, explain that this is just part of his transcendental lila, that he's manifesting, as it were, human emotions, but he himself is all-knowing and cannot be confused or bewildered in any situation. Ye chaiva sattika bhava rajasas tamasas chaye mata ivete tanvidhi natvaham teshu temari. All states of being, Krishna says, whether of goodness, passion, or ignorance, are a manifestation of my energy. I am in one sense everything, but yet I am independent. I am not under the control of the modes of material nature. Krishna is abhijna svara. He is fully cognizant and he is also fully independent. So he is never in any way dependent on his energies. His position is always that of the fully cognizant Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he likes to perform transcendental pastimes, and for that purpose he assumes many different forms and many different moods. So he's enjoying himself in this way. In other incarnations also, such as Baraha, for example, you know, when he's fighting with Hiranyaksha, it appears that, you know, during the fight, during the battle, Hiranyaksha is gaining the upper hand. But this is just a play of the Lord. Same with Hiranyakashipu and the Sringadev. There's a little bit of, you know, in the in the fighting, a little, you know, moment when it seems like Hiranyakashipu is gaining the upper hand, but this is just sporting of the Lord. He likes to sport. And ultimately, no one can defeat him, and he cannot be bewildered by any other person, except, you know, perhaps by Radharani. But that's a different kind of bewilderment. That's just a transcendental interaction of the divine couple in the transcendental prema. So here in play, Lord Krishna is allowing Shalva to seemingly bewilder him, but of course it's only momentarily, and then the Lord proceeds to snap out of that, as it were, and defeat Shalva. So we relish these transcendental pastimes of the Lord, and, you know, we can become so absorbed in the mood of these pastimes that we may also think that Krishna is confused or bewildered. But actually, we should also understand that his position is always supreme, and therefore we should always worship him in that way, take shelter of him, and chant his glories. And in this way, we can also rise out of illusion. We are certainly subjected to confusion, bewilderment. This is the position of a living entity when he comes under control of the material energy. We are very insignificant, and we are very susceptible to the influence of others and to the influence of the energy in which we are situated. If we are situated in the spiritual energy, in the spiritual world, then it will be easy and natural to be Krishna conscious. If we go to the holy dhan such as Mayapur and Vrindavan, where there's a very strong mood of Krishna consciousness, if we engage in devotional service there, then it's easy to be Krishna conscious. When we are in the Western world, there are so many other influences, so one has to be very vigilant. But if one keeps engaged in devotional service, if he follows the principles and the sadhana program, then an associate with devotees, then it won't be so difficult to be Krishna conscious. But if one goes outside of the association of devotees, if he associates with non-devotees in a familiar way, then that influence will rub off on him, and he may easily become forgetful of his spiritual nature. And the material energy itself, of course, is very powerful. Having a material body makes us subjected to so many obstacles and trials and tribulations. Because the body itself is temporary, is subjected to birth, death, old age and disease, subjected to various kinds of miseries by its own nature, miseries due to the environmental conditions, miseries created by other persons. So it's a very, we're in a very sensitive sort of position, very attached to the body and affected by the changing conditions of the body. And also, our mind and intelligence are subject to bewilderment and illusion. Very easily, we can fall prey to that. So that shows that, you know, our weak position in being dominated by the body, by the material energy, by the association that we keep. We do, of course, have some minute independence, and if we use it properly, if we hear from the proper source, Guru Sadha Shastra, and we follow the instructions of their instruction and instructions of devotees, then we can be protected from the powerful influence of the material energy. But we need to be very determined. We need to chant the holy names regularly and attentively. And in this way, we need to protect ourselves by connecting with the spiritual energy. Even though we're in the material world and we're very susceptible to the influence of the material energy, still the spiritual energy is also present here. Krishna is present in so many ways, through his holy names, through the shastra, through the deities, through the devotees. So if we make that connection with Krishna, as we are advised to do, then that will situate us on a spiritual platform, even while in the material world. Mamcha yogya vicharana bhakti yogina sevate sadhana samatika tan brahma bhuya kalpate. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that one who is engaged in devotional service and who doesn't fall down in any circumstance, he can transcend the modes of material nature and attain to the spiritual platform. In that sense, one sees everything as Krishna's energy, and he understands how to use everything in Krishna's service so that it becomes spiritualized. The body becomes spiritualized, the mind becomes spiritualized, the things that we use, they can become spiritualized also by being employed in the service of the Lord. Spiritual, prophet said, means connected to Krishna. Material means the forgetfulness of Krishna. So the same energy, it can be transformed by proper usage and proper consciousness. But if that proper consciousness is not there, then we'll become affected in a different way by our body and mind and the energies that surround us, and they'll cause us suffering and bewilderment and lamentation. So even though we are very small and very weak, still we do have that independence, that choice, how we want to utilize our energies and spend our time in this material world. Therefore, Lord Krishna comes here in his original form and in other incarnations to give instruction and guidance to living entities, how they can come back to the spiritual world, how they can live even in the material world in a spiritual way, in a Krishna conscious way. Lord Krishna gives these instructions through Shastra, and also so many great devotees and acharyas have elaborated on these instructions and passed them down over the centuries, over the millennia, so that they are available for us. And even though it's a long time since Lord Krishna was personally present, still if we hear these instructions and apply them faithfully, we can get the same benefit. There's a verse in the 8th canto where it said that at one time Lord Brahma had not seen the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he had heard about him from Vedic sources, and therefore he was able to appropriately glorify the Lord. So there in the purport, Prabhupada says that there are many persons who were present during Krishna's pastimes and who saw Krishna personally, like Shishupal or Shalva, but they could not understand Krishna's position. Shalva is calling Krishna a weakling. He's abusing him. He thinks he can outwit him, outmaneuver him, defeat him in battle. So obviously Shalva is bewildered by the material energy. He doesn't understand who Krishna is, even though he's personally associating with him. He has such good fortune. Of course, ultimately he's killed by Krishna, and that is also a great blessing. But, you know, he wasn't able to rectify himself and have a relationship with Krishna which would have been really uplifting and beneficial for him. Whereas there are other devotees, you know, who have appeared, so many devotees who have appeared at other times when Krishna was not present on the planet, but because they have heard about Krishna from the proper sources, because they're properly following the process of devotional service, therefore they're actually situated in Krishna consciousness and on the spiritual platform. So in that sense, the Vani is even more important than the Vakut, that the instructions of the Lord are even more important than his personal presence on the planet. Because it's all a question of proper attitude, proper understanding, proper application of the instructions of the Lord. And then one can get the full effect, whether one is present during the Lord's pastimes or present at another time. Of course, naturally, it's the highest honor for a devotee to be present and meet Krishna and be able to join in his pastimes in a favorable way. That's so wonderful, and it's so unfortunate for these persons like Shalva Sishupala that they couldn't take advantage of that opportunity. They were not fortunate like Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj was a demon, but you know, he got the mercy of Vamanadeva, and he was transformed into a great devotee. But most of these demons, you know, they're so attached that right to the end they're trying to fight with Krishna. And so Therefore, they get the mercy of the Lord in the form of being killed by him. But they also get liberation, at least Brahman liberation. There's some kind of spiritual benefit there. That's not even Brahman liberation, not such a high benefit, but still it is a benefit, and they may go from there. Some souls do go from there to the spiritual world, although that's fairly rare. So far I understand that's what happened to Shishupal, because ultimately, of course, he was one of the gatekeepers. Jayan Vijay, Shishupal and Dantavakra, that was the third birth after Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, Kumbhakarna. This was the third birth, so they were due to return to the spiritual world, so that his soul, that of Shishupal, merged into the body of Krishna. So it's a kind of Brahman liberation, merged into the body of Krishna, but then from there returned to his position. And although it is considered a, also came up again as a special service to participate in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, of Jagai and Madai. But anyhow, even those who are killed by the Lord, they get benefit. But how much more benefit does a devotee get who is favorably disposed to the Lord and who gets a transcendental association of the Lord? This is the summum bonum of a devotee's existence, to enter the pastimes of the Lord and remain within the pastimes of the Lord. So, but the Lord, you know, his highest pastimes are the Braja pastimes and the pastimes that he performs also in Mathura, Dvaraka, are of a very, very high nature. So he does manifest so many human sentiments and moods in these pastimes. Therefore we find this kind of seeming lamentation, bewilderment, material affection or fear. They seem to be present, but just a game which the Lord is playing, ultimately to inspire his devotees and ultimately to show his prowess by defeating such demons as Shalva and Shishupal. So any question or comment? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And one of the major illusions is suffering, grief, lamentation, etc. Such the miseries of material nature. So I'm wondering, in what way can one chant the glories of the Lord? Is chanting the holy name chanting his glories as well?
Yes. Kirti means glory. Mm-hmm. Kirtan is glorification.
So what are the ways I'm glorifying the Lord's activities?
Reciting the Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, reciting, you know, various prayers and other names of the Lord, other songs of the Vaishnava Acharyas.
I was reading a Krishna book yesterday, and I thought that we are doing that quarantine with me and Krishna. And I was reading Arjuna is Cupid, right, in the rebirth. Also, I always thought that he was kind of a creative expansion.
You thought that what?
But it also says in there that Arjuna is one of them is one of Krishna's quadruple expansion, Krishna Tattva, or whatever. So is this Arjuna, is he the expansion of the Lord, or is he Cupid?
Well, presumably he's both.
Okay, he's both.
Mm.
Okay. In this verse before, The Lord Krishna says, and you create in all powers.
Which text?
Text 24.
24?
Yes. In translation. Faith is all powerful. Last line.
Uh-huh.
So what do we understand then? If you can dilate on that.
Well, that's the position in the material world that, you know, ultimately, you know, things are beyond our control. and, you know, therefore it's often considered, you know, by living entities that fate is all powerful. In reality, fate is no different from Krishna. but Krishna, in expressing this, he's speaking as if he's an ordinary person, you know, who's confused and just, what can I, it's out of my control, what can I do, you know? But as we know, he's all powerful. Any other questions? Okay, thank you. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Srila Prabhupada Ki Oro Kala.
So this is probably the last one.